Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
When you're down and troubled.
We're back.
And you need
12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. When I'm down and troubled and I need a helping hand, I call on my friend Ken Dalecki, because I know I can always count on Ken. Ken is deputy managing editor for Kiplinger, the Kiplinger editors, and an old friend of ours. He's sitting in for Joan Pride, who's on vacation. We gave her the week off, with pay, too, by the way, I might add. Ken Dalecki, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back. As always, it's good to have you back. Thank you for sitting in for Joan. You know, the only thing about this is whenever Joan's gone, I have to pay her to be on vacation. I have to pay you to be here. So it's really expensive. It's pretty expensive
for
me.
And those checks are so big when they come in the mail, too.
Ken, any thoughts you'd like to share with us on Mr. Reagan?
Oh, well, you could do a whole program on that, Jim. You know, he was, I think, the most the greatest leader we've had in the last 50 years in this country. I mean, he really, really changed so many things in foreign policy and domestic policy.
He was a man for the time, wasn't he?
He was, and it was an amazing confluence of different things. Reagan here, Margaret Thatcher in Great Britain, mm-hmm. the Pope,
and Gorbachev. And frankly, don't forget Gorbachev.
Well, sure. I was going
to
say.
I mean, seriously, you know, Gorbachev. We need to, you know, even though he was the antagonist in those days, to basically a different kind of person. This might not have worked.
Yeah, you remember early in his administration, Reagan had was trying to talk to the Soviets, and
right.
and they had a whole succession of. of people leading the country, and he said, "How can I negotiate with them when they keep dying?"
Right. Yeah, he was actually criticized for not meeting with the Russian leadership. He said, "But they keep dying on me before I can get over there."
Dying on them. But it was just an amazing coming together. And you know, I've been kind of amused at some of the coverage I've seen. I haven't seen a lot of it, but the adulation that the president's been getting from some of the media folks who were his most severe critics.
You know, exactly.
It's interesting to see.
You know,
I'm glad of it, frankly. I mean, I think it's warranted. But
do you think people are surprised? You think that his detractors have been surprised at the outpouring of affection for him and his family?
I don't think so. I don't think I've been surprised.
No, I don't mean you. I'm talking about his detractors, those people you were mentioning. I think they might be a little bit taken aback by how deep and wide the outpouring is.
Yeah, I think that's true. Another thing I think is kind of ironic is that the two big funeral events are occurring on the West Coast and the East Coast, when in fact so much of the president's support came from the so-called flyover country, you know.
Right. Yeah, flyover.
it would have been interesting if they could have had a train roll across the country and the crowds that would have shown up for something like that.
Well, I've also thought it was kind of interesting that you know, Reagan was always good with timing. His timing in mm-hmm. life was always pretty good, and as well as his you know, in his performances. But you know, think about him his funeral being the same week that the G8 was actually in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
well, they always said Reagan had great luck, and that you know, as Napoleon used to say, he'd rather have a general who was lucky than one who was smart.
Was good, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Ken, let's move over to the letter and talk about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world today. And one of the things, you guys, that your lead story is all about the financial situation that the states are in. You know, about a year ago, the states were, I mean, there was actually some talk of some states basically being bankrupt. How was it different today?
Oh, it's been an amazing turnaround. 42 states last year were had deficits which totaled $50 billion. Now, 23 states in this fiscal year, which ends this month, will have a surplus, and most of the others will close the year with balanced books.
In one year.
So that's an amazing turnaround.
In 1 year. And the reasons, there are two or three reasons, I guess, aren't there, Ken?
The main reason is that the U.S. economy is perking up. That's the main one.
Well, that's one reason, but that's the rising tide that floats all boats. But they also, many of them, got in there and looked at their books, and they said, you know what? We may want to have this, but we can't afford it, and they cut some things out.
Well, they had to, absolutely.
Yeah. They had to.
Unlike the federal government, states can't print money, so they can float bond issues and that sort of thing. So it's when they say they always have to have a balanced budget, that's not quite accurate. Most of them can run deficits that way, but still they have to be much more fiscally responsible than the federal government can afford to do.
But there's going to be, according to you guys, they're going to start spending their money beginning next year again.
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of deferred maintenance and things that were put off. Rainy day funds will be built up again, which is a good thing. And they're very leery about the rising costs of health care, which, of course, when the economy improves and more people get jobs, that lessens that strain too. But they always have to be prepared for shifts in the other direction. Homeland Security is also adding to their costs
as an unfunded mandate.
Yeah, right. And they've deferred a lot of information technology spending, which should benefit technology companies when that turns around.
You know, Medicaid is a pretty serious expense for states too, isn't it?
It's a huge one. It's one that I think they worry about the
especially
most, because
with baby boomers.
It is a mandate that they're required to cover.
Right, especially with baby boomers now moving into the salad day, so to speak. In about 15 years, the average baby boomer is going to be 70 years old.
Yeah, most of them, of course, will be covered by Medicare rather than Medicaid. But Medicaid is, which of course is for the poor.
But still, you know what happens?
Oh yeah, there'll be a lot more.
But see what happens, as you know, Ken, is a lot of people when they go into a nursing home.
They
go over to Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they divest of their assets and they go over to Medicaid, and so that's where they go off of Medicare. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We got more to come with our good friend Ken Dalecki. We're going to talk about jobs, and also we're going to talk about business reforms and taxes right after these messages. Stay with us. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Ken Dalecki, Deputy Managing Editor at the Kiplinger Editors. You know, Ken, we're talking about the states and people who don't believe in supply side economics, which is, I understand it, Ken, is essentially if you get the government out of the way with regulations and taxes and offer free trade, that the economy, the marketplace, businesses will grow all the revenue that the government needs. And that's my elementary way of saying it. Is that pretty close?
It's pretty close, but I think you have to add in their tax cuts too, the idea.
Okay,
that
tax cuts will stimulate the
economy to the point where it actually brings in more revenue than the tax costs.
Exactly.
Tax cuts cost the government.
That's what I meant when I said, you know, get the government out of the way with reform of taxes and with regard to taxes. But anyway, the thing I was getting at is that tell me that we haven't seen supply side economics in living color in the last year in these states.
Because the job growth is finally starting to be seriously felt, and we've gained nearly a million jobs in 3 months, March through May, and we think that the economy will generate more than 2 million jobs this year,
which is pretty darn. Which is where the president's a forecaster said it was going to be, and they almost ran him out on the rail about 3 months ago, didn't they? I'm trying to remember right. the guy's name who said that. But what I was saying though is even the people who were against Bush's tax cuts are now admitting that those tax cuts have spurred the economy.
I don't think anybody ever doubts that tax cuts spur the economy. I guess the controversy is what the downside of that might be, and that is the deficit and the impact the deficit has on the economy, and I think that's where the real debate comes. And so far the deficit has been manageable, and as a percentage of GDP, it is not. While it is high and a record in actual terms, in nominal terms, it's not. So that
A lot of people blame, they say that one of the things Ronald Reagan did was he ran up the deficit, but according to my friend Raymond Keating, who's a chief economist with a Small Business Survival Committee, he says that in 1980, before Reagan, the deficit stood at 2.7% of GDP.
That's what you have to look at, right?
But while in Reagan's last budget year, the 1988-89, it was only 2.8%. Mm-hmm. So in terms of a percent of GDP, Reagan's deficit wasn't as bad as people say it is. And mm-hmm. and of course he was the father of Reaganomics. But anyway, the states are benefiting from what's happening right now. You don't hear them complaining about not having enough money anymore. And they're going to be spending money on as you mentioned, information technology, road work. They got some deferred maintenance there, but also on energy. California, for example, really needs to focus on their electricity, don't they?
Yeah, and as you know, some states have publicly owned utilities. Many others don't, and some have divested themselves of it. But those that do are going to beef up, for example, their power grids, which is a major concern for blackouts and brownouts, as we've seen a few years ago.
Right.
So that's another area. And in economic development, from the business standpoint, one of the first things to get cut is economic development when budgets go in the red. And we think there'll be a return to efforts to provide incentives for business to come to various states.
Well, and another thing, speaking of economic development, that's a very interesting topic to me right there, Ken, because economic development authorities have got to, in my opinion, they've got to redefine what their goals are. I mean, the days of a local or regional economic development authority focusing on bringing in the big, landing the big fish, the big manufacturing plant. To me, those days are over as a primary goal for those organizations. They need to be focusing more on growing businesses that are growing local businesses, smaller,
right.
Sort of what we used to call hunting rabbits instead of elephants.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure you know, Jim, there's always a controversy between businesses already in a state trying to grow,
right,
versus luring new businesses into the state. Of course, obviously businesses already there saying, hey, how about us?
Right.
What about me?
No, that's exactly right. And I think
that's a very legitimate question.
That's something that has to be addressed. There's no question about it, that needs to be addressed. And that's what I mean when I say these economic authorities have got to refocus on what's the 21st century. I think a lot of them are still structured based on 20th century realities.
Well, I think there is a growing sensitivity to that, don't you think?
I'm not so sure.
Discussions with people on the subject.
I'm not so sure. I think some of them probably are, but I think a lot of them, a lot of the people that are running those economic development authorities, they were there in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And now, this is it's a new world. The marketplace is the global marketplace, as you know, Ken, is a new world, and I think they need to bring their economic development activity into the 21st century, and that's my admonishment to those guys. 29
okay,
after, we're
going
to be right back with Ken Dalecki. He's with the Kiplinger Editors. We'll be right back after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble here. It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Ken Dalecki is our guest and our good friend. He's deputy managing editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Ken, let's move over and talk about jobs. You mentioned it earlier. Is it like over a million jobs in the last 3 months?
Right, right. Just,
that's incredible.
A quarter, about a quarter million just in May.
That's breathtaking, isn't it?
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good rate. And, of course, that raises some concern, Jim, as I'm sure you know, about the possibility of inflation creeping up.
That's a high-class problem, though, Ken.
The Fed's keeping a close eye on that, but we think it's a moderate enough rate of growth that it's not going to be a problem.
Well, you know, the Fed has a way of just mentioning things now. That's one of the things.
Right,
that Alan
right.
Greenspan,
it's a lot of his job boning.
one of the things Alan Greenspan's done a good job of, you know, he's found out all these other ways to get our attention. You know, he doesn't have to raise rates. Mm-hmm. All he has to do is sneeze or
exactly.
belch or
raise his eyebrow
scratch
and
the top of his head.
The market you know, goes crazy. You know,
he walks down the street and scratches the top of his head, and people say, "What did that mean? What did that mean?"
Right, right.
But you're right.
Well, actually, you know, they become much more careful about signaling. I mean, they've made it much more formal, and because they want to be clear about these things, they don't want to, it's better to hint very very clearly rather than have misconceptions as you were suggesting
right.
there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm still predicting that they're going to raise rates this month, at least a quarter point.
Yeah, well, we go along with that.
And I predicted. I made my prediction in January. But I still have to say that they will, and I predicted they wouldn't do it another time this year. But we'll have to see. Building construction is cooling a little bit now. What's up with that?
Well, you know, the rising rate mortgage rate is having a little bit of an effect on that, but. Overall,
plus we've had a strong run up in construction the last few years, haven't we?
Well, the housing market's been incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it will continue to be strong. We've had record years recently, and it remains strong despite the slight increase in mortgage rates. But contractors' profit margins will probably be squeezed a little bit by higher costs because of material costs have gone up, as I'm sure you know, plus energy costs.
Except that steel is starting to come down a little bit, isn't it?
Well, because it was pretty high,
yeah.
It's come down somewhat.
But China's cooled
off
a little
bit. There's a scarcity of cement in parts of the country, and a huge demand in China,
mm-hmm.
which
yes.
is affecting our economy in all kinds of ways, as you know.
The cement
especially
issue,
in the energy sector.
The cement issue is a big deal. It certainly is, certainly for construction. There's no question about that. Okay, let's move on down and talk about business reforms. It looks like, according to you guys, that we're not going to get that class action lawsuit bill that a lot of people have been wanting to get.
Yeah, not at least not until what they call the silly season's over. That's mm-hmm. the election year. We think there's a better chance next year, but this is a continuous dance up on Capitol Hill. The House has the votes to do it, and the Senate just doesn't. So,
well, this is a bill. This is a bill.
Another one of those stalemates.
Isn't this a bill to move the class action lawsuits from the state courts to the federal courts?
Right, right.
You know what that's about?
You know, would put some limits on punitive damages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very very hot issue, but a very contentious one. And
that'll be a good project for Mr. Bush to focus. That'll be
a
good project for Mr. Bush to focus on in his next term. What about
a lot of it's going to depend on you know the congressional elections, of course, and how the numbers come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who controls what.
One of the things that small businesses are happy about, you guys report, is the passage of an OSHA reform bill. And tell us about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, the House passed and what's called an OSHA, that's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which enforces job safety regulations. And there's been an effort to rein in and give business what some people see as a fair shot at contesting some of the fines that OSHA levels against business. And the House passed legislation to do that. Unfortunately, again, it's probably not going to get through the Senate. We don't think it will get through the
Senate. Once again, the Senate Democrats have thwarted benefits for small businesses. Tony Taylor, stay with us. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there, and you can also be sure when you get, if you subscribe this week, you'll get my article on leadership lessons from Ronald Reagan, and so that'll be in this week's letter if you subscribe right now. Those who were subscribed already got that copy, and also. If you have a question or a comment, here's all you have to do to let me know that what you have to say, and that's just email me at askjim@jbsba.com. Ken Dalecki is with Kiplinger, the Kiplinger editors, and Ken, you guys have got an outstanding website. It's kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R, and that's where people can subscribe to your publications, can't they?
They can do that. They can see all of our publications there. We also have a website just for our newsletter, which is KiplingerForecast.com.
Right.
And that takes you directly to our Kiplinger letters.
But now the main site is also where you can find other things that are free. You can read a lot of information they have there for free. Now, and of course the four letters that they have is the weekly Kiplinger letter, the flagship, and then they have three biweeklies: the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And then you got a magazine, Ken.
Comes out every personal month. Finance magazine.
Mm-hmm. Once a month, and that's available in newsstands and you still have a 30-day free trial that you offer for your publications. Ken, have you got your phone number, the toll-free number handy?
I do. I happen to have it here. 800-544-0155.
I encourage you to take advantage of that 30-day free trial, folks, and just they're gonna let you road test their publications and see if you like it before they charge you for them. That's a pretty good deal. Ken, let's move on and talk about taxes. According to Kiplinger, small proprietorships are most likely to hear from the IRS in terms of audits. Now, tell us why that is.
Well, because many of them have questionable deductions, at least according to the IRS, but particularly firms with gross receipts of under $25,000.
Right.
And
it's because of the blurring of the commingling of personal and business money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Their audit rate is 3%, which doesn't sound like much, but that's triple the rate of all other firms.
Right. Right.
So that's that's pretty high. Self-employed's run into the same problem, mm-hmm. as you probably know, Jim, and they also have a higher audit rate than most taxpayers. Theirs is almost 2%, and that's about three times the rate for individuals.
Well, and the other thing,
it makes sense to really keep careful records if you're running either one of those kinds of businesses.
The other thing that they're looking for is, have you paid your payroll withholding, your payroll taxes? That's
right,
the other
right.
thing, the self-employment taxes, which for small business owners is, is 15.3%. And mm-hmm. so we have to pay the whole thing. Whereas for an employee, you pay half, and the employee pays half. When you're self-employed, you get the honor and the privilege of paying both of those. And so that's another thing that the IRS is looking for. And they get, if you don't pay your income tax, they get they don't like that, but they get really ill if you don't pay your payroll tax. So be sure to get in compliance, folks. Find a CPA to help you with your taxes. And if you're a new business, get all that sorted out early on so you don't get too far down the road and get upside down with the IRS, because it's not much fun when they come knocking on the door. Ken, let's move down and talk about something that I don't think I've ever heard of before, but you guys are reporting this week: private tax collectors may be getting the nod from Congress. Tell us about that.
Well, Uncle Sam needs help in collecting delinquent taxes. They can't do it all with the IRS agents they have on hand. So there's a move afoot to contract out some of that and turn it over to private collectors who get get a piece of the action, if you will. They need some clarification from Congress on exactly how this all is going to work. And so we think it's going to take a little while for this to get sorted out. Probably take at least 2 years before you get a phone call from a private tax collector if you've got a problem with the IRS.
You know, Ken, I'm just imagining a cocktail party where people are standing around and somebody walks over to this some guy and says, "What do you do for a living?" And he says, "Oh, I'm a private tax collector for the U.S. government."
Well, you might come up with a euphemism for that, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd come up with something else. Yeah, they'd have to come up with something else. Ken, let's move over and talk about a word that we haven't heard in a long time: stagflation. Tell us what that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's been on a lot of lips these days. Because of the higher cost of energy. It's causing some people to wonder whether we might have a combination of inflation and sluggish growth.
Which is what we had 25 years ago.
Yes, indeed. And
under the feckless Jimmy Carter.
under a president who had bad luck as opposed to...
No, he didn't have bad
Ronald
luck.
Reagan.
He was just a bad president.
Anyway... When energy prices really spike, that's something that comes back to mind, and people worry about it. We raise the issue because some people are talking about it. We don't think the chances of stagflation are really serious.
Right. I think you're right, but it is something that to note. It's an interesting thing to note about the possibility. We did have it at one time, but we're talking about Jimmy Carter. You know, Jimmy Carter appealed to our worst fears, and Ronald Reagan appealed to our strengths, and I think that's what the difference was. Jimmy Carter just, you know, at one time they were thinking that the presidency was too big for one person. Well, you know what? It was too big for Jimmy Carter. It wasn't for Ronald Reagan. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Ken DeLicke is our guest. He's Deputy Managing Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Ken, let's move over to page 4 and talk about energy. You know, we were talking about stagflation. Nothing could create stagflation more than skyrocketing oil prices. Would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. That's something that can have an immediate impact. And and we think prices are going to remain volatile for a while, and despite the fact that OPEC has authorized opening the spigots, the fact is the production is so tight. The only country that can really turn it on is Saudi Arabia, and as you know, they've got terrorist attacks that they have to worry about. It takes time to crank up the oil fields. And we've got a hurricane season coming up, which might affect depending on how severe and where, might affect our own production, particularly offshore in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
The situation in Venezuela remains very dicey. Bad situation
down
there.
What's going on there? Remind us about that.
Well, the President Chavez of Venezuela is a real left-wing ideologue, a big friend of Fidel Castro, who he praises to the skies. And there's an effort to have him recalled, which is possible under the Constitution there. But he's doing everything he can to block that. The country is very badly divided between his supporters and his detractors, and there was a huge revolt in the oil industry, which was very professionally run before he became president, and he's used it as sort of his personal fiefdom.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to the administration has been trying to kind of lowball the whole thing and hope things work out. It's a very delicate situation.
But that situation, as you say, with all the other things, plus the incredible demand, the increase in demand from Asia especially.
And of course, especially Japan, from China. China's just going to boom as an oil consumer. Anybody who's been to China and seen the development there and the construction, the road construction, the growing prosperity, which means people can buy automobiles, and knows that the China is just going to be a huge, huge consumer of oil.
Well, they already are. And of course, the other problem we've got with energy is that you and I don't use crude oil. We use refined products. Like gasoline, and we don't only have a capacity issue and a supply and demand issue with the crude, we've got a supply and demand issue with the finished products, don't we? Because we don't have enough refineries around the world for gasoline.
Right, we don't, and we import more and more refined product, and Venezuela is a huge supplier of that, by the way. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about.
Let's move on down and talk about. And by the way, just to cap off the energy thing, I'm going to say what I've said before. Ken, I'm predicting that you better get used to $2 a gallon gasoline in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, it's still a lot cheaper than $5 a gallon in Europe, but you're right. It's a shock for most of us to get used to.
But I think
you're right.
Well,
I think we're going to have to get used to it.
You might as well get used to it. I don't think it's coming down anyway soon. Also, let's move on down and talk about politics. Politics has taken a week off with the death of Reagan and the whole national mourning. Tomorrow actually is going to be a day of mourning, a national day of mourning. Politics has taken a week off, hasn't it?
Well, certainly overt politics has. Some people would say politics never takes any time off.
But the presidential campaign, for sure.
I think John Kerry is quite right to suspend campaigning, as has the vice president and the president. In this week, you know, fundraisers have been postponed and so forth.
Let me ask you this question.
Very appropriate.
Let me ask you this question: When Americans stop and reflect on Ronald Reagan, and I think, as I said earlier, the breadth and the depth of this reaction to his passing, I think it surprised a lot of people. It didn't surprise me, but I think it surprised a lot of people. When people stop and reflect on Reagan, they compare him to, and they think of him fondly. Many people are, millions are, and they compare him to both of the presidential candidates. Who do you think comes out on top? And I got about 20 seconds for your answer.
I think Bush comes out a little bit ahead, but there's a risk for Bush in that Reagan is an awful tough act to try to follow and to be compared to.
Big shoes to fill. Well said. That was a good answer. I like the way you put that together. Ken Dalecki, thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Ken Dalecki, ladies and gentlemen, he's the deputy managing editor with the Kiplinger Editors, an old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and we appreciate him very much. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.